Baggio, no, no, keep it. Baggio. Baggio. Play us a ditty.
Okay. Shut up!
Hi, how you? Hi, how you doing?
All right, SpongeBob, calm down.
We are Pop in Circumstance. That's Emily.
I am Emily, and you are Eva.
I am Eva, and we are. Yeah, who are we?
We're two broke post grad nerds who love movies, shows,
and like books and anime and art and things. That's my kind of shtick.
Yeah, she's but. A weeb.
We're also a woman of color, if that puts a little
the thing
a little tint to what we gotta say. But today, what are we gonna talk about, Emily?
Well, we're gonna talk about some women in power, some queens, if you would.
Oh, I love a queen.
Yeah, we love queens. They're the best.
Oh, okay. Let's go.
You want to start it off?
I can start. Sure. Oh, okay. So, today, I don't know if anybody... So, again, I just... Oh, I guess we should probably introduce ourselves. Like, who we are. Just basically. I went to Northern Arizona University. Graphic design major. Studio art. All that stuff. And then I moved out here to California. SoCal. It's a beautiful sunny day here in Southern California.
All right, weather.
A nice, warm 75 degrees.
Mm. You can definitely feel it in my room right now.
Oh, it's I wish I was outside.
It's very stuffy in here.
And we're both trying to get into the entertainment business somehow. We're working on it.
And
what are you doing, Emily? Where are you from?
I am from the state of Florida. I went to the University of South Florida. I was supposed to say the University of Florida. No, I did not. I was a mass communications major with a concentration in broadcasting production and programming. What a fucking title that is.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's
ooh.
A mouthful.
I like a powerful woman.
Yeah, no,
I like
an educated woman. Thing, like, ever, like, someone was like, oh, what did you go to school for? And I was like, mass communications with a concentration in broadcast production and programming.
Oh my. Wow. I'm sorry. I'm sweating a little bit. Hang on.
It was a lot to tell people, but yeah, that's what, and then I moved out here to the state of California. I traded one coast for the other.
This is the better coast.
Yeah, it's not humid and sticky, but the one thing I do not like is you can't sit in the beach. You can't sit in the water.
What do you mean you can't
sit? You cannot sit in the water here because the waves overtake you.
Because those waves over there are babies.
Yeah. There are no waves. You can sit in the water for 2 hours and not. You will shift.
What's the point of going to the beach if there are no waves?
To swim in the water?
Yeah.
To enjoy the water?
Yeah, that's why there are waves. So you can
boogie
board and bodyboard. Oh my gosh, so much. Anyways, we're getting off topic.
Sorry.
Okay, so.
Back to the women.
Yeah, I am a huge anime fan, a bibliophile, art lover, and lover of arts. So, I'm going to talk about one of the most, like powerful women, one of the most influential women I know of, that, like, almost nobody knows of.
Yeah.
Her name is Rumiko Takahashi, and she is from Japan. She is the richest woman in Japan, like, self-made. She is 61 years old. She is a Libra. let's see. Some people may know her best for her manga, her comic books, her graphic novels, such as Inuyasha. And Ranma One Half, and Urusei Yatsura. Let's see. What else? She, most of her stuff has been translated, like, worldwide, like, all over the place, and she's sold over 200 million copies that are still in circulation today. And most of her stuff are, like, still from the 80s and 70s are still circulating through today. Even her, one of her earliest, series is Urusei Yatsura was made in like the 70s, 80s, and they're just rebooting it now. They're like, hey, this is like an iconic, like, I'm not joking, iconic series for Japan. You can see the cute little green-haired alien Lum, like, throughout Japan. Mm-hmm. She's like Japan's like Marilyn Monroe, a sex icon, if you would.
Yeah.
And she's still like resurging and like around there, and they're like, hey, we didn't finish translating this, but like in English, let's finish it up. And so America is like revamping that, which is really cool. And then, even though she's at a ripe young age of 61, she's still, like, bringing out more series, like, every year. She just finished Ranma 1. Oh, sorry, excuse me. She just finished this one, too. It's called Renee, which is, like, a comedy thing. And I heard rumors that she's bringing back one of her unfinished pieces called Mermaid Saga, yeah. Which is, like a what's it called? It's, like, a horror. Like a horror, macabre, Japanese folklore kind of thing, and she hasn't finished it, and then there are rumors that she's bringing it back. So that's really exciting. Anyways, so here's, like, a list of accolades that she's gotten. Like, right out of the bat, out of university, she got this... She made a whole bunch of short stories and stuff, these bunch of short comics, and she... got an honorable mention for that year's, let me try to pronounce this, Shogakukan New Comics Contest in I believe the 70s is when she did that. And then as a budding artist and creator, in 1980, she started one of her, like, her second major series, Maison Ikkoku, which was based on her experience on living in a crowded little townhome with a bunch of other people.
Yeah.
Let's see. In 1987, she made her third major series, Ranma 1/2, which I will expand on that later. That one's probably the most queer thing I've ever read in my life. But we'll get back to that. And then later in the 90s, she made Inuyasha, which has sold millions of copies internationally. Many of the Inuyasha volumes have actually been premiered or featured in the New York Times.
Oh.
So and that's that. And it also, Inuyasha came around the time of like Naruto and stuff.
Yeah.
So people were just like, and it was one of like the first TV shows to actually be like premiered on Toonami.
Yeah.
And people are just like falling in love with this shit. This is when anime was like really rising in the 90s.
I don't remember which one that one is.
Inuyasha is...
You like describe the look of it.
Okay, so... Oh, I guess I have to... Okay, so her style changes throughout the years. She's actually... I've noticed that her style has actually gone back to... slowly going back to her soft look. So back in the... back in the 70s, her style looked very, have you seen Astro Boy? Astro Boy, like, early, like, 70s, 60s cartoony. Have you, like, oh my gosh.
I think so.
It's, like, very soft, round,
yeah,
you know, very simple helmet. Design, big circular oval eyes, big head, smaller bodies. But if you look at, if you Google pictures for, Lum, she is this cute little Asian, or well, she is Asian, but this cute little alien girl with like long green hair, and she has that pinup style.
Yeah.
Rumiko Takahashi had, like, her women are iconic in their pinup styles.
Yeah.
So effing cute. I love them. When she went further on into the 80s, it was very soft, very cute. Ranma 1/2 has that sort of look to it.
Mm-hmm.
Very big eyes, big hair. Her color palette is very pastel-y.
Yeah.
She likes a lot of prime colors, you know, blues, reds, and so on. Fun fact, so Ranma and his... So in the story of Ranma, he and his father were training martial arts in China, and then they both fall into separate magical pools. And when they come out, Ranma comes out as a woman, and his dad comes out as a panda. And so they've been cursed. So I'm just going to talk about Ranma specifically. If he gets doused with cold water, he turns into a girl. If he gets doused with hot water, he turns back into a boy. And so the whole story is pretty much him dealing with this gender bending, quite literally, curse that he has.
Yeah.
And how he goes. And then also his dad previously made a pact with his best friend to have Ranma marry one of his dad's friend's daughters.
Yeah.
And he ends up being betrothed to Akane, who is this, like, tomboyish lesbian. I love her so much.
Hell yeah, boy.
And what's awesome about Ranma, I guess I'll just talk about Ranma because I'm on that now. Ranma is, like, that whole series is so, like, ahead of its time. It coined the harem genre of anime. Have you heard of that?
No.
Okay, so the harem genre is pretty much one boy is there, one man is there, and then he is surrounded by gorgeous women.
Okay.
And they all love him for some reason or another. So that's...
Why a lot of boys have, like, that weird fantasy?
Yeah. This anime, like, it's a really big thing in anime right now. And Rumiko Takahashi, a woman, coined this genre. She made it popular with Ranma One Half. And so Ranma is this guy. He is masculine, but then, like, once he has this curse upon him, at first he hates it. He's just like, ugh, I hate being a girl. This is so dumb, blah, 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 blah. But he ends up, like, embracing his girl side. Yeah. And he's like, hey, I actually kind of like being feminine sometimes. There's some, like, it's a little, like, basic, but he was just like, you know, there are some things I can't do as a boy.
Yeah.
You know, there's some things that society doesn't really accept me doing as a boy, but as I'm a girl, if I appear as a girl, it's totally okay. So it's like commenting on these gender roles.
Yeah.
You know, even though this was made in like the 80s and stuff like that, very ahead of its time. And also his fiance, Akane, she's totally okay with him being a girl. There are very, very few times.
Well, if she's a lesbian, I would assume so.
She could be bi, you know. She could be bi because she falls in love with Ranma. But she, you know, there are a few scenes in the manga and the anime where, like, they're both, you know, Ranma's in his girl form, and it's still like a romantic moment. Like, they have a romantic moment together, even though it's girl and girl, and you're just like, yes, this is me. As a queer, we're both queer, actually.
Yeah.
We're just like, yes, me, especially watching this, I'm like, thank you. That looks lovely. Oh, my heart flutters. So good. Anyways, that's Ranma. It's great, queer. I love it.
So she started basically a whole new trend.
Yeah. Yeah, she started a trend of here's one boy who, I mean, her Ranma is charming. He has a personality. Nowadays, it's been run into the dirt where you just put this cardboard cutout of a basic Mary Sue, Jesus Kun guy who's, like, all-powerful and has no flaws. And then all these girls just like him for literally no reason. He's not even gorgeously handsome.
He's no Howl.
No, he's no Howl from Howl's Moving Castle. No, he's not a pretty boy. But yeah, so that's that. That's one thing she did.
Okay.
And then moving on to Inuyasha, she also was one of the women to start that thrust into a fantasy sort of show.
Mm.
What's the other anime? The other anime, I think it's called Wonderful. Shoot, what is it? I forgot what the anime is called. But there's also another anime, also made by a woman, where a girl is transported into a fantasy realm and made to, you know, save this fantasy realm. And then that woman, along with Rumiko Takahashi, she created Inuyasha, where the main character Kagome, a modern girl, is thrust into another dimension, another realm of fantasy and demons and all that stuff. And she, you know, goes around doing fantasy adventure things. And so nowadays you see that, like, evolved into video games, like Sword Art Online, where, you know, you're transported into some sort of fantasy or digital realm, and then you're there to save the day. So she was one of the people, the pioneers, who started that as well. All right. Let's see. Her top-selling series is Ranma One-Half, with 53 million copies as of now, just in Japan alone. Inuyasha is 45 million copies. Let's see. Some of her awards. Let's go in chronological order. Yes, in chronological order. So, she got the Shogakukan Manga Award in 1980 and 2001. The 1980 was for Urusei Yatsura, and 2001 was for Inuyasha. And so this award is mainly saved for Japan's major major manga award to serialized mangas that, like, you know, have a huge impact in the realm of, you know, comics and manga in Japan. Then she got the Seiyun Award in 1987 and 1989. That's for speculative fiction and best science fiction works and achievements. And she got that for Urusei Yatsura and Mermaid Saga. And then she got the Inkpot Award, which is like the Hall of Fame for comic artists and writers and creators. That was in 1994. And that thing has been started in 1974 by the Comic-Con International. So it says, it's given to professionals in the fields of comic books, comic strips, animation, science fiction, and related areas of pop culture. Like Stan Lee was also given this award back in the 70s.
I was gonna say it's gonna be your influential, who changed the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's given to people who, you know, really make an impact on this world of comics and nerd culture.
Noise.
Yeah, and then so in 2008 she got a Will Eisner Comic Industry Award. Again, it's like similar to the Comic Academy Awards.
Okay.
She was inducted into the Will Eisner Comic Awards Hall of Fame. This is her fourth time. That was her fourth time being nominated. So she kept on being nominated,
but she didn't win.
But she never won until 2018.
That's a long time.
I know. Yeah. So she was nominated in 2014, 2016, and 2017. For some reason, not in 2015. I don't know what stopped her. What stopped her from not being? But that was that. And then she was also nominated against 15 others that year.
Oh, yeah.
So she went. And then, last but not least, earlier this year in 2019, she won the, my French is really bad, the Grand Prix de la Vie, oh my god, I cannot pronounce, Grand Prix de la Vie d'Angoulême.
Anyways, she tried, everybody.
I tried. Anyways, it's a Lifetime Achievement Award. It's given annually during the Angoulême International Comics Festival, to a single comics author. Actually, no, I lied. I give that back. To a few comics authors. It's not a monetary award, but it is like one of the most prestigious awards in Franco-Belgian comics, which is really interesting. It's mainly awarded to French and Belgian authors. And very few people, like, outside of French and Belgian, you know, realms, have been given this award. And I think in total, as of now, only 10 people outside of French and Belgium have gotten these awards, and she is one of them. And only she is one of two women to only receive these awards.
Damn, boy.
And so the other woman who has this is Florence Castac. She's also another creator as well. Good for her. But Rumiko Takahashi joined the ranks of one of the only women of color to be given this award, which is really cool. So now you're up to date. Let's see. She has been quoted, like, back, like, in the 70s when they're talking. She was interviewed about, like, her creative process and her team, her comic book team. And then the guy who was interviewing her, he was like, so, like, why don't you have any men on your, like, on your team, your creative team. Ooh. And then she was just like, why would I need men on my team? They're a distraction. I don't need, they would be putting me back. Why would I need them? They're unnecessary. And I'm just like, okay, go off, I guess.
Yeah, but, like, isn't that at the same time what we not want to do?
Yeah, I like, know.
You know.
Yeah.
They're half the population.
No, yeah, true. Like, it's nice to have everybody included. But it's also really cool to know that she, for her most iconic series, is pretty much mainly run by women.
Oh, hell yeah, boy.
So cool for her. Like I said, she, in her series, even though most of the time all her series are kind of centered around a male lead, most of her women are pretty strong women. Let's see, Lum is, like, even though it has a male lead and the whole story kind of revolves around him, mm-hmm. Lum is the star. She is a cute little alien babe that just, like, steals everybody's hearts and causes chaos, and everyone is like, yes, queen. And she teaches her boy a lesson all the time, and that's great. And then in one of her lesser-known series, Masonikoku, her main female lead, even though she's, like, pined by the main male lead, she drives the story because she is a widow. Mm-hmm. Her husband passed away, and because she can't really get over the loss of a loved one, a dear loved one, her entire, like, emotional and mental, like, health and desire is what drives the entire series, and also what resolves it too.
Yeah.
At the end, kind of spoiler alert if you don't want to. But it's really hard to get your hands on these books and also to see the anime. But the male lead, he eventually is like, you know, I can't compete. You can't compete with a dead man who had such an impact on her life. And, like, he's like, maybe I shouldn't be fighting a dead person. Maybe I should just be me.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's just, and then she also learns, like, maybe I shouldn't be dwelling over this pain that I have. I need to move on. And he would be happy to know that I move on. And so she is able to realize that she can love more than one man.
Yeah.
Which is, like, really cool. And then, she also has a lot of, you know, really strong women and genderqueer kind of characters. Again, in Ranma One Half, I already talked about that, but there's also another character who is a woman physically, but she was raised by a man who really, really wanted a boy. Mm-hmm. And so he raised her as a boy. And so she identifies as a boy. She's okay. I am a boy. So I guess you could say she's kind of like a trans girl. But then sometimes she's aware that she's also physically female. So there's that, even though she's a side character and they don't really focus much about it, you do see that, like,
struggle.
That struggle. You're just like, and I mean, back, I mean, it's still, I mean, now you could probably say it's a little, not very, you know, PC, but like you see, at least it's there.
Yeah.
And you can talk about it. And then in Inuyasha, there's this one villain. He is a genderqueer man.
Mm-hmm.
He's been a topic of controversy because he is canonically a gay man. But okay. He is a psychopath and a killer, and not the best person to represent the queer community.
I was like, hello, have we not watched the what is it, the murder of Giovanni Versace?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
he's a gay man. I think who killed a lot of people. Same thing with Jeffrey Dahmer.
You
can be queer and still be a serial killer.
It is a thing. Yeah, but, like, when you're the only queer person represented in that, then it, you know, and then also in a lot of media, queer people can be perceived as evil.
Yeah. They're not evil.
So I can't give her, like, but then again, a product of the culture and the time.
Yeah.
There's that. Mm. And then, let's see. I'm in love with Inuyasha, the main character, even though it's called Inuyasha, mm-hmm. and the main boy is named Inuyasha, and you think the entire series is based off of him. It is, or like, not about him. It's not. It's all about Kagome, this bad bitch. She's like 15 years old. She's just randomly thrust into some weird world with demons and shit, and everyone's just like, you're a powerful bitch, and she's like, excuse you? And, like, everyone's just, like, after her and her powers, and she's, like, the only one who can save the world, pretty much, because she has these powers to find this jewel and the pieces of this jewel and to keep it out of bad men's, bad people's way. And at the end, you think Inuyasha's gonna save the world? No, bitch. She destroys this evil entity. Spoiler alert. She saves the day. And she solves everything. I'm proud of her. I'm so proud of her. And then also that's, Inuyasha is also another interesting story because it's very character centric. That's like Rumiko Takahashi's main like style, mm-hmm. is that she doesn't really have a plot. She just has like these characters that have a situation and then based off of how the characters are. And their personalities is how the story will go. She's also been quoted as saying, like, I'm just kind of going. I don't really have a plan. I'm just going to go.
Do you think that makes good stories or what?
I don't know. That's one thing that Rumiko Takahashi that I grapple with.
Yes.
Because, like, literally she could pull anything out of her ass and it's gold. Like, anything with her name slapped on it will make millions of dollars. But I have been kind of like upset about it sometimes for some of her stories, like specifically Inuyasha, because it is very story driven. Mm-hmm. But she doesn't spend the time to really build. I don't know if it's important, but like she doesn't really build on like the backstories of these characters. It's kind of just like here's the now. You don't need to worry about what happened in the past. Like Inuyasha, like he was raised by a single mom until she died.
Yes.
And he is a half demon, and you could argue that, you know, his discrimination because of his race, I guess, could be a comment on, like, you know, specifically in Japan, because they're a very homogenous culture.
Yeah.
Their distaste for hafus is what they're called, or hafus or gaijin. Like half-breed people, yeah, I guess. Like
neither one of those sounds pleasant.
No, yeah, hafu is like a half-breed, pretty much. Not a very good like a word. And a gaijin is a foreigner. Even if you were born and raised in Japan, if you have like if your parent is not Japanese, you are a gaijin. You are a foreigner. Yeah, and so you could say that's a comment, but she doesn't really go into that. You know what I mean? Like in,
I guess it's not her what she wants to say.
Yeah, I know. That's like my one critique about Rumiko is that she doesn't really go into this stuff because she just wants to focus on the story. She doesn't really want to do any introspection. Like there's this like little mini arc about how Inuyasha is like, well, actually not a mini arc, it's a very big thing where he wants to get this fancy jewel so he can become full demon. He doesn't want to be half demon. He wants to be full. He wants to be, and he doesn't want to be human because he thinks that's weak. And so, but then he meets Kagome, and Kagome's like, I don't really care. I like you as you are. You don't have to be full one or full other. You being this unique person is what makes you you. Maybe that's her. Maybe now I'm saying it, and maybe that's what she's trying to say.
Maybe.
Maybe, you know, people who are different in this world, that you don't have to be one thing. Like me, I'm a mixed race kid. Like sometimes you feel the need to be one thing because it feels very lonely to be
in the middle
or be unique, racially speaking or ethnically speaking.
Like I said earlier, don't whitewash your name in your last
yeah
name. Mm-hmm. I do it, but that's just because I don't like having people
like mess it up, right? Yeah. It's a situational thing. But anyways, that's kind of a thing. So she talks about this stuff, but she doesn't really elaborate on them.
Okay,
that's like my one critique.
Maybe it's one of those where you're afraid you're going to lose your audience if you get into it too deep.
Maybe,
but at the same time, there are many successful artists today who are not afraid.
to say what they truly believe in, or how they feel, aka Jordan Peele.
Yes, yeah. I've seen that before. Yeah,
like, he is not afraid to portray things in the way that he has always seen them. Mm-hmm. Even if it offend, it shouldn't offend you, but like,
even if it makes you uncomfortable,
it makes you uncomfortable. Mm-hmm.
That's the better word.
Yeah. So that's my little thing about Rumiko. She or Takahashi-san, she is a powerhouse. Literally, even at her age, she's just spitting out this stuff and being successful, still winning awards. Creating very different stories that you don't see before, and stories that start trends and are staples for Japanese culture and pop culture. I'm excited to see what she has next.
Yeah.
Like, if she does Mermaid Saga again, I'll be like, yes! But then also, like, what else does she have planned? Like, literally, she's just a wild card. You don't know what she's going to come up with next, so I'm excited. So I'm done. That's me. What are you going to talk about?
You know, there's a lot of powerful women in the film industry, or at least they're making their way through. I guess the most recent would be Brie Larson as Captain Marvel. They made all of the money.
All of the money.
Even with people protesting that movie because they are...
Misogyny?
People do not like where Brie Larson stands on a lot of political things.
They don't like the F word.
Yeah, they don't like feminists. They don't. They don't like it. The F word.
Scandalous.
They don't like very outspoken people. And Brie is not...
Outspoken women specifically. Yeah, it was like
she is not afraid of saying her opinion. She is not afraid of voicing things that she doesn't think is right. The biggest problem that people had with Captain Marvel, not even the movie, this was before the movie came out. What they had a problem with was literally Brie just saying that she wanted to have more people of color and women to be at the press junkets because all you normally see are white men. And all she didn't say that she didn't want the white men there. She just wanted more access for more people. She said this before at a different thing. It was for A Wrinkle in Time, and she goes, "I don't care about the opinion of a white man on this movie. It wasn't made for you. It was made for the people of color, for the younger women, for queer women. Like, it was made for other people, not you." So then she was like, "I just want to hear the other opinions of other people," because that's the biggest thing. You won't know, like, a Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. You don't, like, sure, as a white person, you can maybe understand what it's trying to say, but as a person of color, that movie hits you differently than it would somebody else. So all she was saying was, "Hey, I want a little bit more diversity when I'm doing my press junkets, because I want them to see, I want their opinion, because these movies were made for them." So then everybody's like, "She doesn't like, she doesn't like white men. No, I'm offended. Blah, 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 blah. Fuck this movie. We're going to go watch Alita instead if you want to have a powerful woman." And then at the same time, I'm like, it doesn't matter. The money still goes to Disney, folks, because Disney owns Fox.
Oh, my God. I could.
So
I,
no matter what you just did.
Alita, but that's because that's based off of an anime. Yes. But I won't go on. Your turn.
Well, you could, because, like, that's the thing. Like, people.
I haven't even seen the movie. I don't want to see the movie, so I feel like I heard
I don't know, I haven't seen it, but I heard that people who know the story liked the movie, but other people were like, it didn't feel complete.
Yeah, I heard it. My cousin saw it, and she called me specifically. She rarely calls me, but she called me, and she was just like, "So you like anime?" I was like, "That's a fact."
Yes, that is true.
And then
true.
She was like, "So Alita Battle Angel." I was like, I wasn't going to tell her that I haven't seen it, because I think she sees if I like anime, I've seen everything.
Yeah.
But she was just like... telling me about it, and I was like, "How was it?" Because she saw it, and then she's like, "It was too much. Like, they tried to put too much information in."
Yeah.
Which is, I guess, you know. And then some people were also mad about Captain Marvel for a similar thing. They're like, oh, they didn't talk about her past with her husband.
Yeah, where and her like, true origin comes from.
Yeah, her true origin story.
Because it's much harder because she wasn't Captain Marvel at first. She was Miss Marvel. Mm-hmm.
And, it's just too much information. If you really wanted to put all that information into one movie, it would have turned out to be like a little battle angel.
Yeah, and it's also like it wouldn't be Captain Marvel's story necessarily.
It'd be Miss Marvel's story.
Yeah, because like she's still attached to the husband and blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And I was like, hey, folks, they changed up the story because it's what made it easier for her to meld into the MCU. You mm-hmm. have to put into account. They're not. None of these movies are purely correct based off their right. comic.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Thanos, the reason why he snaps half the people is because he's in love with death. They don't do it in the movie. You don't know that. You just. He's doing it because, you know, not enough people in his home planet had enough food and shit like that. Mm-hmm. So his ideology is like, yeah, let's just snap half the people off the goddamn planet. Bitch, what? Whatever. But, like...
Spoiler alert.
Yo, like, sorry, I just...
It's been out for a while.
For a year. You would have seen it. You've seen the memes.
I still haven't seen it.
Oh, god damn it, Eva. But, no, like... I did not mean to get on this rant, but like the people get upset over the smallest things. Mm-hmm. It's a movie. It's not real life. You do not. And then my biggest problem with everybody yelling at Brie Larson because she's so outspoken, why aren't they yelling at Chris Evans or Mark Ruffalo? You don't boy
the same thing.
Yeah, I was like, you ain't boycotting Captain America.
That's true.
You're not boycotting any of the Avengers movies when a lot of those actors are very outspoken.
They're saying the same things that she's saying.
Yeah, they're literally saying the same shit. They applaud her for saying the things that she says. Mm-hmm. But here we are, yelling at a woman rather than at the men. And I'm like, nah,
I
mean, bitch.
I don't want to yell at anybody.
Yeah, I was like, I don't want to. No.
But if you're going to yell at one person saying something, yell at the other people
yeah,
who are saying
the same
thing.
Yeah, because you can't. That's the same
thing.
They
don't want to.
Yeah, you're picking and choosing your battles because Chris Evans is a white male. You're like, yeah, he can have his own opinions, but them women, no, mm-hmm. no, no, they cannot.
A woman with an opinion?
How dare
you
she?
Can't.
A woman with an opinion that she hates white men? Oh, no, no, no.
I don't think she like, hates white men.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so at all.
But
just like, let her give this moment to mm-hmm. all these kids who look up to Captain Marvel now. The amount of people wearing Captain Marvel merchandise
is
Disneyland
amazing.
Like, if you go to the parks, Jesus Christ, they're all over the place.
Even little boys.
Yeah, I
like,
love it.
I was in World of Disney, and I saw, like, they have this whole, like, Captain Marvel, like, it looks like an altar.
It's what they do to all the movies.
Yeah, there's Dumbo one, too, but that's a different thing. There's this huge Captain Marvel, like, merchandise area, mm-hmm. and there's this one notebook, and it's, like, one of those, you know how kids are really into those, like, flippy sequence things that change
yes.
color? There's a book that has, like, the Captain Marvel thing, so it has, like, her normal suit, and then you flip it up, and it turns into her negative suit.
Yes.
And, this, like, I saw, like, a lot of boys go up to this thing, too. The little boys are just, like, so excited to see this. They like the sequence notebook.
Yeah.
They like the cat. They like
the
all
cat.
This.
Yep. The cat is a total scene stealer in that goddamn movie. The best chemistry is between Samuel Jackson and that goddamn cat. Which I honestly took, because I watched an interview of Brie Larson.
Uh-huh.
She's deathly allergic to cats.
Oh, same.
So I do not know how she did those scenes.
Is that a hyperallergenic cat?
It looks like a normal tabby cat, and they are not. So I was very confused. Either they drugged her up, or she is not in those scenes very often. Like, I was just... That's
true acting right
yeah.
there. We sacrifice for the craft.
Sacrifice your goddamn body for it.
Mm-hmm,
it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. But, like, yeah. And then, like, I don't know. I don't know why they hate on her for just playing a goddamn character.
Do you know the comparison, like, how much money she got? Excuse me.
Playing?
I burped. Sky. Do you know how much, like, money Captain Marvel got in comparison to Wonder Woman?
I can tell you that. Give me like 2 seconds.
Pause for a second.
Continue talking about something, and then I will look that up. Three reasons why Wonder Woman is better than Captain Marvel. Yeah, I knew that.
Do we have to compare? Do we have to compare?
It's gonna be the thing. They can't.
I don't
want to
compare them because I love Wonder Woman for what it is, and I mean I haven't seen Captain Marvel yet, but I heard it's a fun show, a fun movie. But also, going back to queer, just because I love that topic.
Okay, Captain Marvel surpasses Wonder Woman.
Opinion. Oh,
sorry. No, you go. The film is on track to reach 900 million mark at the worldwide box office by the end of this upcoming
week. 900 million.
This was posted. Oh yeah, this week. Wonder Woman. Okay, as it stands, the film has currently earned 538.6 million overseas and 286.4 million at the domestic office.
So literally, Captain Marvel just like crushed it.
Oh yeah, she made all of the money.
Wow. Okay.
Let's see if it tells me Wonder Woman's. It does not tell me.
Okay. Well.
Out,
I mean, we get the idea.
It surpasses it, so.
Yeah, for sure. But, like, we shouldn't compare them because they're both really iconic. Really, like, iconic to, you know, feminism and.
Yeah.
And all that other kinds of stuff.
And all that jazz.
And all that jazz. Yes. I want your opinion. Captain Marvel and her best friend. Gay or not gay? Go.
Gay or not gay? Fuck.
I heard my girlfriend who went to go see the movie, she got a lot of lesbian vibes.
I think, okay, I don't know Brie Larson's sexuality or anything, but it could just be her, the way she acts. I think Captain Marvel herself, the way she's portrayed in this film, does it really have
like a sexuality?
Yeah. Okay. Or at least one with. I don't think she likes men. Not that she doesn't like men, but she doesn't that.
And that there's no chemistry.
There's no character in the film that she has that sexual connection to.
Okay.
Or like a romantic connection to. That is definitely not a thing in this film. But I don't think it was meant to be. I think this film was more about
the story.
Her connection to humanity and her connection to the Kree.
Okay.
And her connection to humanity extends from her best friend. So her relationship with her best friend. So that's the only true relationship you see besides her and Samuel L. Jackson. And, like, there's not. Like, that with between them, it's you can see the friendship. Between her and her best friend, you definitely see, like. But you could also see her, because she kind of was a mom to the other. To her daughter, her best friend's daughter. She had two very, very strong female roles in her life, because I don't think the dad's in the picture at all. So she had those two as her parental figures. But I guess you could see a little bit of a lesbian vibe between the two. I don't know.
But that leads me to a thing that some people have been discussing on the interwebs. Mainly Tumblr.
Because they can't see the nudes anymore, so they have to discuss.
Oh, yeah, you gotta talk about something. But a lot of people have this argument on, like, a lot of people ship these two people who are canonically, like, best friends.
Yes.
Of the same sex, and they're, like, ship. The gay ship. They're obviously queer. And if you don't see that in the movies, then they're homophobic. However, someone came up with the argument that why can't we have two very masculine men just be really close friends?
Are you adding Bucky Barnes and Steve Rogers?
We are talking about this because I get both sides. Get like, yes, more queer representation. Yes. But how often do you see two masculine men have a good, pure, emotional friendship. You know what because, I mean? Like, why does it have to be gay? Why can't men just be men? Be masculine men. Masculine heterosexual men without a loving best friendship. You know, why can't they hug?
Yeah, no, like, that's what I don't understand, because, like, in real life, you have your bros that you would do anything for. They're your best friends. Mm-hmm. They're, like, there's nothing you won't tell them. There's nothing you won't do with them.
Yeah, but a lot of people
But they can't, yeah. They don't like that in film, necessarily speaking. Yeah. They're like, nah, they're gay, they're fucking...
Like, a man, a heterosexual man with a loving, emotional, healthy relationship with another man,
like,
that's gay.
Oh, ooh. Like, everybody's biggest thing with Bucky and Steve is, like, they're totally in love. They're totally, like, a thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, it's because, literally, their friendship is everything. That's his last remaining family from when he was, like, you know, when, I think Steve's family passed away, and he goes and lives with Bucky's family. Yeah. That's his brother. Mm-hmm. They're not best, they're brothers. Like, they are truly, truly, truly connected emotionally, and everything. So I was like, let them be really, really close. Mm-hmm. And don't get mad at Steve for protecting Bucky when Bucky has protected Steve his whole life.
Yeah, and then also, like, is that me wanting Captain Marvel and her best friend to be gay? Is that me trying to reach grapple for more lesbians?
Or, it could be, but at the same time,
can I not let them be besties?
Have you seen Tessa Thompson and Brie Larson on Twitter?
No.
They literally retweet all the gay fan fictions between the two of them. And I said, yes, bitch. That is something I truly ship. I will go for that any day.
Oh, the actors themselves?
Yeah, no, well, they keep on... Hold on.
It's really hard to do. Are you going to show me a Brie Larson fan fiction?
Well, no, it's artwork that they keep on retweeting.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the fan fiction.
No.
I believe fan fiction is art.
It is art, but, like, of its own form. I have felt
strong emotions.
I was gonna say, 50 Shades of Grey.
Okay.
Is a Twilight fanfiction.
You know what? Maybe we can have a whole other, like, episode dedicated to Twilight, because I fucking love Twilight. But we will not talk about it.
Look at the way she dresses. Do you think she's queer?
She looks like a lesbian.
I'm not assuming her sexuality.
We don't want to.
We're not doing that.
And then we're not gonna stereotype people.
Oh, this one's Maria and Carol. So this is her best friend, and her, she retweeted it.
Yeah, we're not gonna stereotype
these
here,
two.
But that, aww. Wow. Guys, go on Twitter. Go on her, on Brie Larson's Twitter. She has awesome fan. Oh, I follow that artist online.
And then she said, we
Bev
cute.
Johnson. I follow her on Instagram. Go follow her.
So she'll basically retweet any sort of art. Not all of them, but she does some, like, of
the,
them
the
and
pure
stuff.
Good art.
Yes.
Of her and her.
She's very about empowering women. She's very big on that. That's a thing, like, people take offense to that. I said, no, she's just wanting women to have the same opportunities that men have had for God knows how long. Mm-hmm. And she wants women of color to have those opportunities as well, because...
Use your privilege and your platform.
Yeah, which is what you should be doing as a person who is influential. You should be using... Not that, like, you have to, but... Mm-hmm. You have this position where you're able to better the situation, or make it at least more...
Or at least help.
Yeah. Like, have a conversation. People can at least talk about it.
I mean, it's really sad that, you know, people of color, dare I say, need white people to be heard. Yeah. You know, which is really suck. Like, it sucks because, like, people of color, we need... Like, we're saying all these things. We're putting it out there. But
we've
no
been
one
saying
cares.
It forever.
Yeah, but no one cares unless a white person says, like, repeats it.
Yep.
Because if a white person says, hey, guys, this person once said this, and this is a problem, and then a lot of people all of a sudden care about it, you know, and it sucks, but, like, it's like you gotta play the game. You know
it's
what
like,
I mean?
Jessica Chastain and Octavia Spencer have, like, the best friendship. Mm-hmm. And, like... Jessica was just talking about, like, getting equal pay and everything like that, and then she didn't realize that even women of color in the film industry will still get paid less than normal, not normal, whoa, than white women.
Right.
But the normal actors is normally a white person, but like you won't, she didn't know that like they get paid less even of them. So then they're trying to, she was like, I won't do it unless she's getting paid the same amount as me and we're getting paid the same amount as him. So it's
the whole gender and race pay thing could be a whole episode in itself.
But it's like, those are things that you, it sucks. You don't need your white savior, but you need their help. Just a little bit. Just so people can see the problem. I don't know.
Have you seen
that? Like that it's like that, but like, they're not paying attention.
Yeah.
Netflix canceling one day at a time. Also,
but that could also be like a whole, I heard, didn't you tell me it was because of like,
yeah, that's a different, that's, there's multiple reasons,
streaming,
but like they even were like, people of color, like, we, at least you let us know that you want to see these things, but like, then why cancel the show if people want that?
She's in Cuba, what's she gonna do?
So it's one of those where it's like, you might not, it's very hard. It's very interesting. Unless you're Oprah. Oprah can do whatever she wants and people will listen to her. But she has fought her. That's the difference, though. If you are someone smaller, you're going, unfortunately, to need the help of a white person. Probably.
To get up.
But if you have worked your ass off for a long time, or have worked your ass off very, very much, then you have a little bit more. People are going to listen to Oprah. People are going to listen to Whoopi Goldberg. People will listen to Viola Davis. They're going to listen to them because they are very influential women. So, period. Yeah. That's pretty much. I went on a rant.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. I mean, it's okay. That's the whole point. Is
you get me started on these comic book stuff.
So I mean, that's the whole point of this podcast. I don't know if you guys have come here to listen to us talk about nerd shit, but
maybe you agree with me. Maybe you totally disagree with me, and that's okay. Fine. You can let me know your honest opinion. I don't care. I'm not gonna get.
I actually prefer to listen to people who don't share my opinion.
Yeah, I'd rather. I want to hear your side of the story. Although, don't yell and scream. I'd like to have a conversation.
Don't throw profanities at me. I am, even though I'm Aquarius, and I am a wall and emotionally constipated, I am a Cancer on the inside. I'm very emotional. Very, very sensitive. Please don't yell at me.
Yeah, I was like, I like people having a discussion with me. Please tell me your opinion. Please let me see your point of view, but do not step down on my point of view.
But this is a podcast. We say what we want.
Yeah, we're going to say what we want. But I'm just saying, if you ever want to comment.
Where can they do that? Where can they do that, Emily?
Oh, perfect segue. Look at us. I actually have no idea. Hold on, give me 2 seconds.
It's literally right there.
I know, I'm kidding. You can actually, we have a Twitter account. It's Pop N, N, the letter
like
N.
Pop, letter N.
Circumstance.
Yes, try to spell that.
Do I have to?
No, not you, just them.
I was like, I'm not gonna,
like, hopefully
they can
you
do
know
that.
How to spell that.
If not, autocorrect, we'll figure it out for you. Pop and Circumstance is our Twitter. I am on Twitter at the Emily Gran. I just wanted Emily Gran, but somebody already had that. So it's gonna be Giron, that's my last name.
I do have a Twitter. I don't really use it much. I think my latest post, I retweeted Cole Sprouse, and he said, I'm just a daddy long legs looking for his mommy big thighs, thick thighs, or something like that.
Yes,
and
but that's a very old tweet,
I
so
know.
She's not on the Twitter very often.
I can try.
But you can find Eva.
You can find me at Eva-Bevamart. It's like Eva Mart, but with a B in the front. I try to get Bevamart because that's my art, like,
Instagram.
But like, for some reason, somebody already took it, and I was like, who is she trying to steal my
brand?
Yeah, exactly. But whatever. I'm more active on Instagram if you want to see my art and my face. Please don't stalk me. My art and my face at Bevamart. That's Bevamart on Instagram. Our intro song is by Baggio Ardon. He is a queer Latino designer.
Graphic designer.
And he's just a man of many traits. You can follow him on Instagram at baggioardon.design. His icon is like a little blue profile.
Ardon is A-R-D-O-N, by the way.
Yeah, Baggio. So I'm just going to spell it because he has a very ethnic name. So it's baggioardon.design at Instagram. So go follow him.
And go follow Eva. Go follow me.
Follow me, please.
Go follow our Twitter account, please. We will be posting shows whenever we get the chance to do it. We're two very busy women, but we try very hard.
Yeah, I got two jobs. I gotta work.
I basically work full time at my job.
So. Yeah, so
I'm part time, but I work full time.
And we have secret jobs. We can't tell you what they are.
They're not that secret. We just don't want to get in trouble.
We'll be back next week. I don't know what we're going to talk about. We'll be nerdy. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. Dumbo comes out this weekend.
Ooh. Okay, I just got an idea. It might have to do with Dumbo.
Ooh.
A little.
Ooh, look, you got a little nugget, a little tease.
A little tease for this.
I hate her. But yeah, that's Poppin' Circumstance. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in.
Bye.
Bye.